We're talking with James Fox and Lee Spiegel. James has been on a six-year odyssey to produce and direct The Phenomenon, this film that's coming out later this year. Lee has been investigating these same topics and mysteries for decades now. They've collaborated on this mega project. When we come back, I want to get into metamaterials. It's one of the hottest topics of our current era, discussion about whether or not scraps and pieces of mystery metal supposedly recovered from crash sites is being analyzed in various labs, whether or not they have any insight into any of the results there, and then get into some of the cases that they dug into in their film. And then we open up the phone lines with your calls and questions and comments. We'll be right back. James Fox and Lee Spiegel, let's talk about metamaterials. A lot of discussion in UFO circles. It's been mentioned in the New York Times story that maybe this mystery metal had been obtained and is being analyzed. I'd like, James, first, your take on it. I don't know what you can say about whether or not the film gets into it, but I do know that one of your advisors and friends is Jacques Vallée, and he had shared with me previously that his group, he has some colleagues that are analyzing some mysterious samples. We know that TTSA and Hal Puthoff and folks like that have their own samples that have been stashed in attics and drawers and barns and places like that, maybe from crash sites. Your take on metamaterials and whether or not we're close to hearing some news on that?
Well, we're definitely close to hearing some news on that. I know, I know, because I was there.
Really?
And so is Lee. Yes. But we unfortunately, so here's what we're going to say. And Lee, both Lee and I have carefully drafted this together because we've got to be somewhat tight-lipped on this. So I'm going to read it to you.
Okay.
We have a segment in the film that does deal with physical evidence, and it reveals startling new analysis techniques in a laboratory. It's a couple people, and that's about as far as we can take it right now. But I've shared it with
Well, it's a good tease, I would say. Startling new analysis techniques is not quite the same as startling new analysis, though.
Well, it's both. Both the machine using to analyze is revolutionary, and the result is revolutionary. Let's put it that way.
Right.
All right. Lee, can I squeeze any more info than that out of you?
Well, I would have to agree with James. When we went to see this thing, this whole idea that we're talking about here, that we're trying to keep under wraps for the time being, and we were invited to see this new technique of analysis, it was quite amazing.
And the machine.
And yes. It involves a new machine of sorts. And what the machine can do and will be extraordinary. And it will basically open up the field even broader than it is now. I mean, these people who we were talking with, who were doing this research, they don't want to keep this research to themselves. When they are ready and feel very comfortable with what they're doing, they're going to release it to all science, they said.
Just like Elon Musk. I remember when the individual that we met with had made those statements, and I reflected back on when Elon Musk had released the patents to his electric cars and motors and powertrain, that sort of thing. So it was a similar discussion when we met these people.
Musk is an interesting character on this topic. Did you, I know, you, James, you set your sights pretty high. Did you consider putting him in the film?
I did. And I made probably, maybe 25 attempts. I even made a commercial for his car and sent it to him.
Having been on the receiving end of your requests, I know what that process is like. So you are persistent. Well, that's encouraging that we're going to hear some news about metamaterials. That's great. Let me ask you about Jacques Vallée, because he's somebody that I obviously respect a great deal. Has he been able to guide the whole process of making this film?
Oh, I'll take the first stab at this. Absolutely, yes.
Tell him about the dirt road, Lonnie's truck, and Jacques Vallée.
Oh God! last year, at some point, James was given the original, I guess, 1973 or 1974 white beat up pickup truck that was owned by Lonnie Zamora from the Socorro, New Mexico UFO case.
Wow.
And James had gotten friendly and close to Lonnie's family. And at one point, James offered to pay to buy the truck because it was like Lonnie Zamora's truck. And Mrs. Zamora just gave the truck to James.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so James brought it back, drove it back to Bolinas, California, had some work done on it. And on one of our first encounters with Jacques in the studio, he wanted to see what we were doing on the film. Jacques really, really wanted to have some pictures taken of the three of us at Lonnie Zamora's truck, posing with the truck.
So to answer your question, yes, we all went up to the studio on multiple occasions. We share every clip that we have.
Yeah.
He raises the bar extremely high. He's incredibly he's incredibly good at what he does. Fastidious. Sometimes it drives me a little crazy because I'm trying to do the best I possibly can, and it's just so hard, you know. And also, he's a scientist, and so he wants every little detail. I'm like, well, this is not the same. It's going to be hard for me to cram all that into one little. But so he has been overseeing every segment of the film.
Well, and also, George, in addition to that, we really wanted to get as much interview material on camera from Jacques as part of his legacy as well. He's been involved with this subject for so many decades, and one of the reasons why he agreed to be interviewed by us was because we wanted him, and we agreed that he should be our official advisor, so that any new script additions or changes or questions, we would always run them past him, so that he could maintain and give us that credibility every step of the way for what we're doing. And
we're
grateful to him for that.
Let me give you guys some examples of how incredible it's been, because we're talking about, oh, one of the cases we're doing, Lonnie Zamora, Socorro, 1964, you know, and he's like, oh, gosh, I just happened to be at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base with Dr. Jalen Hynek during that, when the call came in of that landing in 1964.
Wow.
There were aspects of the case that I had no idea about. The fact that Dr. Hynek fell down and, like, hurt his face, his jaw out there at the landing site because it's, you know, pretty uneven ground and stuff. Just all these things that I could run by. You know, we found the original symbol in Dr. Hynek's own handwriting at the National Press. National Archives. And Jacques takes a look at it. And, of course, he does something I never in a million years would have thought to do right away. He just takes it and says, well, I'm going to take it to my cattle brand, you know, guys and see if this is some sort of cattle brand, you know, maybe, you know, I wouldn't have never thought about doing something like that, a cattle brand on the side of a UFO. But, well, no, because Jacques talks about, you know, that there's trickery and there's, you know, and that there's, they actually have a sense of humor at times, and that you catch these things. You know, wouldn't it be funny, like, if an everyday cattle brand was stamped on the side of the UFO? Of course, it didn't turn out to be the case, but just things like that that I never in a million years would have ever thought. And every single case that we go into, of course, Jacques got all the backside story, you know, right down to when he says he brought James McDonald and Dr. Hynek together for the first time at a dinner party at his house. But, wow, you're the one that got, really? Wow. That he's, of course, sharing all these incredible photographs with us, which we're going to feature in the movie. So a wonderful historical perspective. And
you mentioned that you had been to South America a couple of times. Are any of those cases that Dr. Vallée had worked on, or can you tell us which ones you're going to highlight?
Yeah, well, that's, so here's the thing right now. We went into a number of cases. We interviewed some generals down in South America. We addressed, I think it's called Operación Plato, took place in the 70s, where these discs were seen shooting beams of light down into a village. There was a 1986 flyover in, I think it was Sao Paulo. There was a Varginha case, 1996, for the alleged crash. And then the creatures were wandering around in broad daylight in the town of Varginha. That one, funny, you know, Jacques was extremely skeptical. That was rather odd. And I shared some of the, you know, some of the statements of on-camera stuff from the different witnesses that I'd met with. Of course, I didn't believe that one either. But he had been down there investigating other cases over the years, and one of which was another one which I looked into. I got some on-camera statements, but the one I really stuck my teeth into is Varginha. It was kind of recent, more recent.
We'll take a couple of calls. East of the Rockies, Josh in Indiana. Good morning, Josh.
Hi, Dave. Dave, I'm sorry. Hi, George.
Wow.
My question is about the private sector and the role that they're going to play, you know, moving forward, as, you know, we kind of move the needle forward with disclosure. Do you think that the private sector, you know, the likes of Elon Musk and Bob Bigelow, will have that level of credibility, I guess, among the masses when, you know, the time and place comes for them to kind of give their input on this? Or do you feel like people will want this information, for it to be believable, to come from the big governments of the world? And I guess the second part to that question is, you know, as we move forward into space exploration, you know, going to Mars, you know, if my facts are right here, you know, in the next 5 years, we're supposed to have manned missions to Mars. I know this is a purely speculative question, but what impact do you think, or what correlation will there be with these manned missions deeper into space? How will that impact disclosure? Do you think there's going to be some aha moment when that happens, or is it still going to just be a slow trickle?
Okay, that's a lot to chew on there. Lee, you want to take that on first?
Josh, one thing to keep in mind, just because there may be an initial manned mission to Mars, keep in mind, at this point in time, technologically, we can't go very far from our own backyards. We don't have the resources or the wherewithal yet, supposedly, to go to Mars or to some of the other places where there might be possible life elsewhere in the solar system. We can certainly continue to send unmanned vehicles to various places where there might be water and investigation, but we're a long ways off from actually colonizing, you know, places like Mars, even the moon. So I don't think that the fact that manned exploration of other bodies in our solar system will have any impact on UFO-related materials or situations, because, again, we don't have any idea what the agenda is of whoever and whatever is in control of these UFOs. We just don't know. We can't possibly know. And so we can speculate, really, till the alien cows come home about something like this. All that we can continue to do is technologically move forward as we can, and hopes that it will somehow benefit humanity on some levels. But I don't think that the UFO subject will have any result or will be influenced by our attempts to go further out into space.
Well, George, you're the only, I think, mainstream journalist that addresses this issue in the way you've done. How do you feel? Do you feel like the climate has changed?
Well, the media environment has changed, and that gives cover to Congress, to the military, to be more transparent on the topic, I think. It makes it more legitimate for mainstream scientists to explore this, but I'm not holding my breath for anything like the caller was mentioning about disclosure. I don't think there's going to be any kind of formal announcement. I mean, you know, if the phenomenon, whatever it is, decides it wants to display itself in a way that is can't be denied, it could do it, I suppose, but it hasn't done that. It gives us glimpses here and there, but it doesn't appear over every capital on live TV all the time, all at once. As for disclosure by private citizens, Elon Musk or Bob Bigelow, I mean, you know, I don't know. Musk issues statements all the time about UFOs that are sort of really playful, and I don't really have a sense of where he is on it. Mr. Bigelow doesn't give a lot of interviews at all, so I wouldn't hold my breath for either of those guys either.
Yeah, I remember when actually approaching you at some point, hey, I thought that, you know, I've met Bigelow. Bigelow reached out to me, or I've met with him at his home years ago. And but recently he's been impossible to reach, and so I consulted with you to see whether or not you were like, nope, not going to happen. Forget it. So I was like, okay, cancel that one off the list.
Let me ask you this before we go back to the phones. On the issues of secrecy, government secrecy, Lee, you've been at it a long time. Do you think that there was a point at which the government secrecy on the UFO topic was legitimate and justified? And do you anticipate that it's going to make a big change? I mean, did you ever get a whiff of something like MJ-12, some sort of a control mechanism for the whole subject?
The earliest interviews that I ever did with people, George, was back in 1975 when I was interviewing folks for my UFO record album, UFOs, The Credibility Factor. And that was, for me, an amazing experience because I got to talk to people like original astronaut Gordon Cooper, Alan Hynek, Stan Friedman, Marine Major Donald Kehoe, who was like the initial military whistleblower of all time about UFOs. And I started to get these opinions flowing into me. And at the time, back then in the 70s, it was all about government conspiracy. Why isn't the government telling us what they know? And what, you know, why can't we be told the truth? And over a period of time, George, my attitude has kind of changed because now I realize because it's global, people have got to remember this is not an American phenomenon. This is global. Whatever it is we're talking about, it's international. And so how many nations, how many leaders of nations around the world are really interested and enthusiastic about making an announcement on their 6 o'clock or 11 o'clock news by saying, well, the president of so-and-so country has now issued a formal announcement that yes, there are unidentified flying objects operating in the skies above their country. We don't feel like there's any aggressive attitude toward us or our aircraft, but we can't get close enough to them to pin them down or to stop them. We can't outmaneuver them. But don't worry about it. We're here to protect you because we're supposed to be guarding and protecting the citizens' airspace above our countries. No country in the world is going to come out and make a statement like that to acknowledge, yes, there are things that we don't explain or that we don't understand in our skies. We can't give you all the answers because we don't know all the answers, but please just go about your daily business. We're here
to protect
you.
Lee, this is so funny. I've got to add to this because we came across, thanks to people like David Marler, some archived material that the world has never seen. And no one's ever heard or seen
right.
since God knows when. And one of the things I stumbled upon was probably early 50s reporter who is quoting General Nathan Twining.
I'll tell you what, the music is telling us. Hold on here a second, James. I want to hear this story. When we come back, you can tell us what this early 1950s news report said. Talking with Lee Spiegel, James Fox, about the phenomenon, their movie. James Fox and Lee Spiegel talking about their book, their soon-to-be-released film, The Phenomenon, which has taken them all over the world, Australia, South America, China, Africa, and all over North America, investigating UFO cases and encounters. In a moment, we'll go back to the phones for the callers who've been patiently waiting us to pick up the line. In the meantime, I want to mention about George Norrie's live stage show. It's going to Miramar, Fort Lauderdale, and Miami. That's coming up July 27th, 2019. You can get information on the Coast to Coast website, but George's guests for the live show will include Chip Coffey, Billy Carson, and Jim Paris. There's a live band, audience participation. I've been to these things. They're a lot of fun, and you can check out information on how to get tickets on the Coast to Coast website. We'll be right back with more of your calls and questions and comments in our final segment on Coast to Coast AM. James, before the break, you were telling us about some archival material that you'd obtained for the film?
Yes.
What is it?
Oh, it was just a really funny quote from General Nathan Twining. They've got some of the smartest brains in the country working on it. And if it does turn out to be people from Jupiter, Mars, or some other far-off planet, he believes we've got nothing to worry about. It's like late 40s. I thought that was really funny, you know. It's like, oh, really? We don't know who they are, where they come from, but yeah, you got nothing to worry about, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting how they arrived at that conclusion. So you've got other archival stuff that the world hasn't seen since it first aired?
I have. What we came up, you wouldn't believe what we came up with. I mean, I literally at one point had to have the head of CBS, the owner of CBS, get involved because we found stuff that we just simply couldn't believe we found. And at the last minute, the guy that we were dealing with at this place called Wazi Digital, he's like, sorry, that stuff you thought was we thought was available, actually none of it's available. It's like, what? And we don't know, it's not available. So we had spent 3.5 months going back and forth, you know, all the ins and outs and negotiating prices and all this stuff. And then the carpet got pulled out from under us. And some of it was the entire presentation at the United Nations that Lee Spiegel had done in 1978 with Jacques Vallée and Dr. Hynek and Sergeant Coyne. And so I reached out to a friend of mine who was sort of my ace in the hole and very high up in the food chain of the entertainment industry. And he just happened to have dinner the night before with the owner of CBS. And so we got him involved. And he reached out to another company, and he pulled some strings, and then we got it all released, thank God, is the short version. But, yeah, we've got archive footage that even Jacques was like, how did you find that stuff?
Right.
You know,
right.
Really, really great stuff. Yeah, really, really cool stuff.
It just sounds like the scope of the film, it's you're cramming a lot of stuff in. I mean, the Australia case could be a film by itself, the Africa case, the China case.
We're going to do an 8 or 10 hour miniseries after this because we realized exactly that. No, seriously. I have enough material already gathered pretty much to do an 8 to 10 hour miniseries.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I spent a month in Australia alone. You should see the stuff we uncovered in Australia. It's phenomenal. Unbelievable. Photographic evidence that's never been seen for 50 years. Tracked the guy down and took the photograph, the Polaroid, got to see the original Polaroid, got to put it on camera, scanned it for the first time ever.
Are you talking about the Westall case?
Yes.
You have photographs of the object?
Yes, and I got an interview with a science teacher that every researcher in Australia said we'd never get. Are we on radio right now?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus. I didn't realize that.
Okay, take care.
All right, let's take a couple of calls. On the wild card line, Joe in Monterey. Hey, Joe, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have some experiences and I have some knowledge that I'd like to share with you. Some direct experiences. One of them, you had asked a question. We don't know why they showed themselves, a particular group. This particular group I'm familiar with, you're looking at positive ones of that particular race. There are negative ones. Most of them are the negative ones. The positive ones are doing the best they can to wake us up to the fact that we are not alone. That's number one. That's why they show themselves. They will take care of their business with their kind. But what they do for us in that area is to show that we are not alone in the universe. In fact, they do it so often. And they do make contact with people telepathically. Most of these races are telepathically. If you want to understand extraterrestrials, you have to understand two or three different things, basic things. Number one, their genetics are completely different than ours, truly completely different.
Hey, George, this gentleman, I can't way beyond hear him. He keeps going in.
Joe, I'm going to ask you to hold on a second. They can't hear you right now, so we're going to move on, but I appreciate the call. What Joe was saying is that he's had some encounters and that at least some of these encounters are pretty negative. And I don't know if you, maybe we can attack it this way, is you've been all over the world, had different people from different countries and different cultures describe these encounters. is there a cultural filter that changes the nature of the experience? I mean, or is the idea of ETs, UFOs, aliens here to invade us from movies and TV so prevalent around the world that everyone sort of has the same framework? James, you have a sense of that?
No, I did not encounter any negative stuff. I mean, there were a couple of occasions where people had hinted to the fact they might have gone on board but didn't say definitively that's what happened. And they hinted to the fact that it was sort of against their will, but they were not harmed. A couple of those things I had heard. But overall, everyone said that, you know, they felt it was benign. In fact, the military guy said, you know, that it was like taking matches out of the hands of a baby. The children in Rua, when they were, you know, and I didn't realize this, but, you know, until you met with the witnesses and met with the children that are now young adults 20 years later, they said they knew right away that they were not going to be harmed. They knew, in fact, the way they described the moment of contact, and I said, well, was it like, were you looking at through a bush or was it around? No, this was like 3 feet away, face to face. I mean, they were right there. And they said, you know, have you ever been out in the wilderness and you come across a really rare wild animal and there's that moment of curiosity, that mystery, that sort of standoff where you're both looking at each other and there's this curiosity going on and, wow, this intrigue? They said it was like that. And it went on for, you know, and there was telepathic communication, but it went on for like 15 minutes. But they said that nobody said they felt in any danger at all. I haven't heard that at all.
That's
some
kind of encouraging.
People trying to shoot at these things said they probably was a bad idea, and their control panels locked up. But that was it, you know.
We're going to go west of the Rockies to Terry in Van Nuys, California. Good morning, Terry.
Gentlemen, I was in the car when I heard this conversation going. I cannot wait to see the film because I've had an experience similar. And when George was talking about trying to communicate or them trying to communicate with us, well, this is what I can tell you. On my way back at 1 in the morning, this year was 1976, the year before Close Encounters came out, and several years before E.T. came out. I was driving about 90 miles out of town at 1 in the morning and needed to take a fresh position over the wheel and wake myself up so I could make those last 90 miles. Threw myself across the wheel and looked up. Keeping a pace over the top of the car, about maybe 15 feet up, was a rectangular, lightless, no lights, object keeping along with me. I felt, when I looked up and saw it, my heart just about jumped out my throat. I felt them startled to have been seen. They didn't want to be seen. And before I could really, really lose control of myself, here's what they put in my mind. Don't panic. You're in no danger. You knew it was there anyway. And that just about caused me to have a heart attack, if nothing else.
I have got to tell you something quickly. I can't believe that you just said that. Caller, thank you for bringing that up, because I interviewed this gentleman that was a witness from the 1997 case in Arizona. And he was a very grounded, he was a pilot. He was not one, you know, to speculate, or really just a grounded, solid guy. And at the end of the interview, I'll never forget it. He says, something else. I said, what? What are you saying? There's something else I wanted to forget about it. I said, no, I want to hear it. What is it? I forgot. I shouldn't have brought it up. Long story short, I said, no, I want to hear it. What else did you not tell me? Oh, the damn thing gave me a message. He said, really? He said, yeah, we come in peace. That's what he told me. This is the last guy in ever. You saw his testimony on camera. Of course, it never got included in part of the film. I just kept it out. But yeah, because I just didn't know how to deal with that whole angle of the phenomenon. But, yeah, he said, they told me we're not here to harm you. We come in peace. I mean, they were just, you know, and they sent that message to this guy. And he knew how it was going to be received by sharing that information with me. He knew it, you know, he knew. It sounds crazy, you know. UFOs landing, occupants getting out, sounds crazy. I'm gonna be the first one to tell you that.
Well, it sounds stereotypical, like a movie scene, we come in peace. Lee, you've heard alien editorials over the years, right?
Yeah, no, but, you, no, no. Mm-hmm. But I can't sit there and tell it was verbatim, but there was something like, we mean no harm. We didn't come to harm you. Come in peace. I mean, that was the message. So, yeah. But thank you, caller, for sharing that.
We're going to go to Mark in Raleigh, North Carolina. Mark, how you doing?
Yeah, doing well, thanks. In 1978, I was a school kid, and we had a truck that showed up from Nassau carrying display stuff, and our teacher asked for a couple of volunteers to help the NASA truck guy unload the truck, and I was one of the people that volunteered. And we were unloading boxes and things. I headed back to the truck. I guess we'd unloaded the last of it. And I got back before to the truck before the driver and the other kid. And the only thing left that was forward, there was a lot of stuff in there, boxes and crates and things, but the only thing left forward was a huge metal pipe. And just a should have been really, really heavy with a tag. I remember a paper tag on the end of it on a wire. And I bent down to pick it up, and, you know, expecting it to be extremely heavy. I put my arms under it to pick it up, and I nearly smashed my face in because this thing was light as a feather. I mean, you could almost bounce it in your hands. And the truck driver came back around the corner and said, "What are you doing? Put that down. That doesn't go here." And so I put it back down, and I said, "What is that?" He said, "Never mind, come down off the truck." And he went and shut the doors, and he said, "You guys go back to your class." That was it. So I have no idea to this day what that was, but it shouldn't have existed in 1978, or I doubt it even exists now. I don't know a lot about, you know, composite materials. This was definitely metal and shiny, and it's just very strange.
Well, thanks for sharing that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, except for these guys are not going to tell us anymore about metamaterials, are you?
yeah, I wish we could tell more, but I mean, it's coming out. Believe me, it's coming out.
George, can I tell you one last thing about disclosure that I think it's just important. I'd like to get this across. It's one of my disclosure favorites because it comes from a former commander-in-chief of the United States. And it's amazing that in 2005, Bill Clinton was in the middle of a speech in Hong Kong when someone in the audience asked about his interest in UFOs, and his response was pretty amazing. And I'm just going to give you a quote directly from what he said. And I still, every time I hear this, it's amazing that any president would have said this. Quote.
Oh, and Lee, before you give the quote, Lee
yes.
Pointed this clip out to us. I put our assistant on it. Our assistant found the gentleman who shot it in Hong Kong back in 2006 or something. And
2005, yeah.
We got the original interview, and so the quote you're about to hear is actually part is in the movie.
Great. And here's the quote. Bill Clinton, "I did attempt to find out if there were any secret government documents that reveal things, and if there were, they were concealed from me too. I wouldn't be the first president that underlings have lied to or that career bureaucrats have waited out. But there may be some career person sitting around somewhere hiding these dark secrets, even from elected presidents. But if so, they successfully eluded me, and I'm almost embarrassed to tell you I did try to find out." End quote. And when I saw him say this, I thought, wow, the fact that he said he wouldn't be the first president underlings have lied to, that certainly implied the possibility that information about UFOs is kept away from elected presidents. And I took it one step further. It also suggests that presidents of the United States don't have a high enough security clearance or need to know about this information. So if that's true, then here's the big question. Who exactly is in charge of all this? You know, and that's a tough question.
Well, do you have an answer or a guess?
Well, you know, my only guess is that I think that Clinton's statement was some form of disclosure, that he even went out on a limb to say that. All that I can possibly speculate on is that there is another higher secret organization. And I don't think it's American. I think there has to be a global organization of some magnitude that's controlling information about these off-planet visitors or something. That's all they can come up with.
Well, yeah, but Lee, when we went and met with Senator
were sitting on a treasure trove of evidence that, and I even said to him, I said, are you implying right now that there's additional evidence that's yet to see the light of day? And he pauses, clearly thinks about what he's about to say, and he says, I'm telling you that most of the evidence hasn't seen the light of day.
That
was the most powerful statement I had ever gotten on camera from a government official personally. And I'm thinking to myself, now, wait a minute. He's, Senate Majority Leader. He's, been in the ear of the president. I don't know what he shared with Obama or didn't share with Obama. I have no idea. But who is in control of said evidence,
right,
and why isn't it getting released? And then you hear these stories about, Luis Elizondo with ATIF, and, he's saying that, 12 or 15 more videos that are coming down the pike, and all of a sudden the gate, the door closes, and that's it. Now, who makes the decision? Who makes the decision whether or not that can be released? Who can declassify that? It's baffling to me. Who's in control?
Yeah,
we'd all like the answer to that. Senator Reid, I have ongoing communications with him on this topic. He did speak to President Clinton when Bill Clinton was in the White House about this topic, and I know because he conveyed it to me right after he had that conversation. But just sort of checking the president's pulse on his interest in the issue, and he conveyed the same story, that basically he had tried, he had assigned Webb Hubble to try to figure it out, and he got nowhere on that. Also tried to find out about JFK, but we'll talk about that another time. Lee Spiegel, great to have you back. James Fox,
Thank you. Good luck
with your film, The Phenomenon. I can't wait to see it, and hope people will check it out. Thank you both for being here.
George, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, George.
We'll come back when it comes out, and we'll talk about it some more. Thanks also to Linda Howell and to my colleagues there at Coast to Coast, Michael Cosio, Donna Walker, our webmaster tonight, Greg Bishop, Dan Galani, and Chris Boros. I'm George Knapp. Good night, everyone.